Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And joining me now in the studio is Chris Orwell with the New Mexico Museum of Space History. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. Boy, conversations going on all over the place in here.
Well, just having a sidebar conversation before we got going on the air.
I noticed he turned the microphone, so I don't even have the thing turned on yet. So,
so hot mics are bad.
Got that right. Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. But we're hot now, so.
Yep.
But I tell you what, Chris, a lot of things continue to happen up at the New Mexico Museum of Space History. You just had an astronomy night.
Yep. And we got another one in March.
You got another one in March, for
the astronomy club. So the date has not been set yet because they're taking a look at the ISS, the space station, passovers, because it's going to be kind of concentrated on talking about the space station flyovers. And that's going to become very relevant to us in this area because we're going to, the museum, along with some of the schools in the area, is going to be doing a downlink this year. NASA has approved us to do a downlink from the International Space Station again, which is very, very rare to, do two downlinks in, with one organization in one area this close together, because we just did one just under 5 years ago. But this one is special. This one comes out of a result of the fact that the commander of one of the upcoming flights to the International Space Station and the flight engineer and then commander of one of the expeditions is a classmate of mine. From the Naval Academy, and we served out in the fleet as submariners together. And so Steve got selected, Steve Bowen got selected to the astronaut program back in the early 2000s. He's flown on 3 shuttle flights already. He's been to the ISS, but this will be his first expedition to the ISS. And so next week, in fact, actually a week from today, I'm heading to Florida to be there for the launch. And he launches on the 26th at 2 a.m. 2 a.m. East Coast time, so about midnight our time here, with the Crew 6 mission, NASA's Crew 6 mission, which is one of the SpaceX vehicles, so Falcon 9 rocket.
So we're not going to ask you to call in and do any reports.
Yeah, not unless you want something at 12:07.
Midnight, I'm not getting up to come in and do it. Sorry, buddy. I love you, man, but I'm not going to do that.
No, but it's really exciting. Steve has been wanting to get up to the ISS for an extended expedition, and finally got selected. And not only did he get selected, he's going to be commanding the flight up.
Wow.
And then for Expedition 68, which will be the first half of his time up there, he'll be a flight engineer. And then when it switches over to Expedition 69, which depends on how crews change out up there, because they're constantly rotating personnel, astronauts and cosmonauts up on the International Space Station. In any case, though, so when they go to Expedition 69, then Steve becomes the commander. So, woohoo! So very excited for him.
I got to ask this question. You guys were both submariners or submariners.
Yep, submariners. There you go. Yep,
I'm going to get that straight one of these days. So you're both submariners.
Mm-hmm.
So from below the water to outer space.
Yep.
How did you guys make that leap?
Well, he made it very my situation was a little bit more strange and tortured. His was pretty straightforward. He obviously was serving out in the fleet, and NASA's always looking for astronauts. Now, when a lot of people, when they think astronauts, they think pilots.
Yeah.
But you got to remember that a portion of the core of astronauts are pilots, but a large portion of the core are engineers, scientists, technicians, folks like that, who are the mission specialists. And it gets a little bit different now because obviously during the shuttle program, you literally were, piloting that thing as it came down for a landing, With the capsules now, you pilot, there's automatic docking, there is manual docking, which is flying, but, tell you the truth, it's three-dimensional moving around. It's not that different than a submarine in the ocean.
Wow.
You know, so in any case, you know, so he applied in to become a mission specialist. You know, he had a master's degree in, from MIT that he got, you know, after the academy and, you know, successful submarine. And he ended up getting selected.
Wow.
He was the, you know, kind of the first true submariner to get selected into the program.
Wow.
And so that was, you know, obviously really exciting for him. That happened a few years before I got into the space industry. And, you know, my route into the space industry was I was retiring from the Navy. I was the commanding officer of the ROTC unit at University of Kansas. I was going to take some time off after retiring, planned a trip for my family out to the Wichita area to visit some of the museums and the zoo and things like that there. And when I logged onto the website for the Kansas Cosmosphere, they had the listing on the website that the current president and CEO had was resigning, and that they were doing a nationwide search for a replacement. And I was like, wow, you know, I just said to my wife, I just said, wow, that sounds fascinating and would be a lot of fun. And but I said, I have no experience in the museum industry, which I didn't, you know, so and wasn't a, you know, didn't have a PhD in history or anything like that, you know. So I'm like, yeah, they'll never consider me. And she just said very logically, well, you can't not have the job any more than you do right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, send in your application, you know. So I sent my resume down to them, and strangely enough, you know, a couple months later, I'm running a space museum.
In Hutchinson, Kansas.
Yeah, a number of reasons for that. So, but yeah, and did that, you know, for almost 6 years, and then came down here. So, but yeah, it was, so my path into it was a little stranger, you know. So, yeah. But the good thing is I got into that job. Then at the beginning of 2007, and it was just over a year later that Steve went up on his first flight, you know. So obviously when I got into that job, you know, I got in touch with Steve immediately, you know, and we were talking, you know. And so, yeah, you know, it was just kind of nice, you know. So been involved with him a lot closer, you know, since the academy time. Once you head out to the fleet, you know, unless you're on the same ship, you know, you will speak, but you're not necessarily in constant contact kind of thing. So, you know, nowadays we're in contact much more frequently than we were when we were out in the fleet, you know, and that's just the industry, you know. And he's a great source of info, you know, so about what's going on, you know, what's going on with his training, you know, what's going on with the astronaut office, you know. So yeah, it's always been fun, you know. So
so you wound up in space museum and he wound up in space.
Yeah, he wound up, you know, so with the, you know, I gotta say he's got the better half of this one, you know. So I love the space museum, but I'd rather be in space.
Yeah. Well, on that I'm gonna say we got the better half of the deal having you here with our space museum.
Appreciate that. So very excited for him, for the mission coming up. So that's it's a crew of four that are going up. So two Americans, one Russian, and then one astronaut from the United Arab Emirates. Couldn't say that there for a second. So in any case, so really, you know, really exciting. And then he'll be up there for at least 6 months. We know that.
Wow.
So sometime during those 6 months, like I said, NASA has approved us for the downlink. So we know we're going to do one. We just don't know the date yet, you know, and they don't set anything in stone until the people get up there, because things can change, you know. Heck, there's supposed to be a launch on the 26th, you know. I'm knocking on wood right now, so, but you know, that could always change as well.
No doubt.
In fact, it already changed once, because it was supposed to launch up on the 19th, you know. It was supposed to be going up here in a few days, but they had to move it back a week because the Russians have had to rush to get a spacecraft up to the station to replace the one that was damaged. The Soyuz spacecraft that was damaged by a meteorite hit, and it destroyed the cooling system on board. And so the fear with that capsule is that if they tried to bring folks back in it, that it would overheat on the way back in through the atmosphere. And so they're rushing to get a replacement Soyuz up there, and that is supposed to launch, guess when? 18th, you know, and then be docking on the 19th, you know. So they didn't want any conflict of, you know, that's two spacecraft missions, and all the stuff associated with that. So in any case, so they just moved back the launch of Crew 6.
There you go. Well, this is the ISS. It's not Deep Space Nine where you can dock multiple ships.
Yeah, you can dock multiple ships on the ISS.
You?
Oh, yeah, you can. There are, you know, because... you will end up having, you know, just think about it, just alone, you're always going to have the Soyuz spacecraft that's going to be up there for rescue. You're also, you know, you have a Dragon, one of the, you know, the Crew 6 mission when it goes up there, that will be one of the escape vehicles. And you're bringing up supply vehicles all the time.
Yeah,
you're bringing
okay.
up other people, you know, so there's multiple docking ports on the space station. But it's still a traffic problem,
right.
you know, so you still do have the traffic problem of, you know, how many craft can you have there,
right.
you know, so it's not some infinite number. This is yeah, this isn't Deep Space Nine. Where
right,
you
right.
Got, you
I'll, know. I'll go with that and stuff. You know, you might have the multiple, but you don't have a Quarks up there.
Nope, definitely don't. Yeah, so, yeah, no, nor a transporter.
You know, yeah,
so,
really? Yeah. No.
We've got a transporter.
You got a transporter.
We got a transporter.
There you go, so keep that a secret. But,
yeah.
Where are we at now with flood repairs and different things like that going on?
Okay, well, thankfully, the flood repairs finally got approved. Yay! You know, so and that. I'm just going to be quiet right there. So about, you know, any discussions about the process and agencies and things like that. But it took a long time for it to finally make it through the state's risk management folks
yeah.
and the insurance companies, et cetera. In any case, though, yay, it finally got approved. So what's going on right now is that probably today, the contract will be signed,
okay.
and then White Sands Construction is actually going to do
the
remediation of the rocket park, and so that should that'll be getting going here at some point in time in the not too distant future.
Right.
And then once that contract's signed, then White Sands is going to, you know, work with us, because it's going to be interesting, because the first step in all of the remediation is to lift all the objects that are in that area, all the missiles and the V2 remains and the sled, rocket sled, and the crawler track, you know, and the X-37 neutral buoyancy lab simulator. Lift all of those things and put them down in the parking lot.
It's going to involve some crane work.
Big time crane work. And so that's got to be the first step in this one. So that'll be kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, so, and fun. And then once that gets out of the way, then it's just a lot of, you know, digging, removing all of the debris and the rock that got washed around, you know, removing all of that. And then doing repairs to a lot of the retaining walls that got damaged during that process, get those repaired. And then putting down all new rock and everything else. So yeah, then it'll be really pretty. The sad thing is that the black rock, volcanic rock that we've had up in there for forever. So you can't get that in that sort of bulk anymore. So,
no,
so it's going to shift over to the red rock, like we've got the Padre red rock, like we've got everywhere else, you know? So
in other words, you guys aren't going to sneak up to Valley of Fires and break off some
they
rock.
Weren't too thrilled about us coming up there and breaking apart rock and taking it away in the amounts that we didn't even ask. So yeah, no, I started to say that. I'm like, oh, somebody's going to take me seriously.
Yeah.
So no, yeah, no, it's not. Not an option.
Not an option. So,
yeah.
There, yeah.
Volcanic rock is not an option.
Lord knows we got a lot of it in this state. There's no doubt about it. So, but so that's going to be good. So that's going to take a while, and you know, and that tedious work, that hard, heavy work of getting the cranes in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you can't just drive them all over the place. Mm-mm. They're going to have long booms to reach in, grab it, swing it over, and
swing
set
it over,
down.
Set it down, et cetera. So
yeah,
that's gonna be a long, drawn out process. our fear at the moment is that exactly when they're going to want to do all this stuff is going to be during spring break, a period of our busiest, you know, visitation of the year. And so we're going to have to work all that out, you know, to make sure that there's as little disruption as possible to our regular visitation. No doubt, though, there's going to be disruption.
You're basically dismantling the entire outside area.
Yeah.
And then putting it back together.
Yep.
So there's really not a good time to do it.
No. But definitely during spring break is like the worst time to do it.
Yeah, so right after that, and then we're good. So
yeah, well, we'll see. You know, we may have to do it during spring break. A lot of it depends, once again, you know, once we get into the discussions with White Sands as far as timing, you know, because a lot of it depends on, you know, when their availability and everything else. So, you know, it will get done when it gets done, and we'll figure out how to do it just like we do everything else, you know.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's – we always try to stay open. Mm-hmm. When we're doing changes, yeah. The only thing, like when we did the theater, yeah, we had to shut down the theater because, right. You're ripping apart the entire dome. There's nothing right. to show films on, right. So, yeah, we had to close the theater down then. But the museum, even when we're doing work on one of the floors, when we're renovating a gallery, we're putting up new walls, we're doing everything, we leave the rest of the museum open and try to even get people to, so that they can go through the area where we're working so they can see what we're doing, too.
Yeah.
That's what we always try to do, and we'll try and do the same thing with this one. It's a lot of museums, like the National Air and Space Museum, they'll just shut down entire sections. A lot of museums, when they're doing renovations like this, will just shut down everything, because it's easier.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with, when we did the restrooms, strangely enough, when we were doing the heavy work, was during the time of COVID. So, and the shutdown. So it actually was, there was a little bit of a, I'm going to knock on wood again. Yeah. So it was a blessing in disguise a little bit that everything was shut down anyways, because that allowed us to really rip apart, significant portions of the museum where people would not have been able to come in and visit the museum during those time frames. But this is not one of those situations. Now, now we've got a ton of other work that's getting going as well. We're getting ready to start work on repairs. I mean, some of this stuff does not sound that interesting, but it's crucial stuff to continue to get done on the infrastructure side. But the sewer lines coming down out of the buildings and repairing those, because we're getting breaks. Fire system. We're doing repairs to our pump and getting new seals put in on that one. And then some of the more fun stuff is that we're doing work in the galleries. We're finally closing off the windows on the fourth floor galleries, which is our rockets, missiles, and motors exhibit, similar to what we did on the third floor, where the human spaceflight exhibit, and it allows us to put objects in there that are more sensitive in nature, because otherwise, with those windows there, I'm not putting things in there that can get damaged by the sunlight.
Right, yeah.
And there's a lot of sunlight that comes in, through those windows. And so in any case, it's just continuing the process. Plus, we're closing off a couple of sections of windows on the fifth floor, and then also on the rampways going from the fifth to the fourth floor.
Oh.
And that's for a couple of exhibit purposes as well, for light control in those areas. We're going to have electricians in over the next couple months, and we're completely relighting two of the floors of the museum. Getting away from the standard large wide area lighting that's more like almost like classroom lighting, and going into the more specific spot lighting of objects, like what we did on the third floor. Now we're about to do that on the fourth floor and the fifth floor. And once again, we're going to try and keep the museum open when we're doing when we're doing all of that. We are right now, we're in the process, we've got the statements of work out, we're waiting for the quotes coming in for redoing exhibit graphic design and write-ups for the sci-fi and sci-fact exhibit, for the rockets, missiles, and motors exhibit, for the satellite gallery, and for the fifth floor, and for the Tombaugh. That's pretty much the entire museum. So that's getting done literally right now, and that will get going, each of those galleries and stuff. So this year, our plans are to completely refurbish and reopen the satellite gallery, completely refurbish the rockets, missiles, and motors gallery, to convert over the Gene Roddenberry exhibit to the sci-fi and sci-fact exhibit, to finish the lobby exhibit, which is right around the elevators. So, and then to have the designs done, but not do them this calendar year. We'll actually start on the stuff next calendar year for the entire Tombaugh building and for the fifth floor of the museum. So, next year and a half, 2 years is going to see a tremendous amount of change. And this is us playing catch up.
Yeah.
Catch up from the time when we were shut down for COVID. And we came out of COVID, we just kind of started ramping things up again. And then I had the issues last year with my mom's health, and I was out and away. And so everything kind of stopped again.
Yeah.
Because of that. And so now we're getting going, and we're trying to run at a slightly faster speed. So whereas this stuff normally might have taken to 5 years. Now, we're going to try and cram it into 2 years. So,
in memory of Gene Roddenberry, we're going warp speed on some of this stuff. There you go.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So, we might be pushing the engines a bit hard. Scotty may be yelling at us, you know.
He always does a factor of four when he does those estimates.
He always gives a little bit of extra time in his estimates, you know. So, it'll take 4 hours, Captain. Yeah. You know, when it really only took 30 minutes. Yep. Yeah.
So. Oh, that's great. Hey, I got to ask you, the Launchpad lectures.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How are they going?
Very well. In fact, actually, the last Launchpad lecture we did at the beginning of this month had a huge crowd. We didn't have enough chairs.
Wow.
Which really, you know, which was like, whoa, you know, so that was surprising. So, they're going very well, you know, and that's what you want to see is just as year over year goes, you know, bit by bit, more and more people coming, you know. So, you know, this is a similar program to what I did also up at the Cosmosphere when we started it up there, you know, and it started off with a couple of people there and then eventually built up to about 80 to 90, you know, every month. You know, here we started out with same thing, a couple of people. Now we're up to pushing 50 plus, you know, so at the lectures. So that's good. You know, that's a lot. There's a lot of people who are the same people we see every month.
Yeah.
And then we get a few, you know, a few new ones, you know, and some will come, some will go, some will, you know, repeat back. It all depends. Yeah. But it's getting better and better, you know. So, and, you know, we've already got our plan out, you know, for the rest of the year, you know, for all the lectures and into next year as well, for planning for that. The one coming up this in March, is going to be about cooperation between the Soviet Union / Russia, and the United States. So cooperation in space, you know, and really with the Soviet Union and the U.S., you know, and how the two organizations kind of détente in space, you know. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, continued to this day, even with the political issues.
Right.
That very obviously are going on between most of the world and Russia and definitively the U.S. and Russia. And even with the politics of that, the cooperation in space is, you know, still continues on, you know, and the agencies and the engineers, technicians, the astronauts still working together and to try and continue that mission, you know, and specific in this point in time, the mission is the International Space Station.
It's almost interesting how whatever we have going on here on the planet politically or world issues wise, it seems we get into space and it's a whole different aspect.
Yeah.
Instead of being at each other, we're working with each other. I think that is a great transition from the problems to a mission and a goal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are still things that go on, you know, at the upper levels of the organizations, but if down at the ground level, it's complete cooperation because they know, you know, that your lives depend on us, our lives depend on you. Mm. You know, if we don't work together, things can go bad.
And I imagine that cooperation is especially strong with those men and women that are actually up in space at the ISS.
These guys are working together real well.
Mm-hmm,
that's a crew.
Yeah.
That's a crew up there, you know, so, and you know, the commanders of the missions, you know, can be from either country kind of thing, and everybody, you know, everybody works on the projects together, you know, so helping each other out. So, yeah, it's once again, it's one of those great areas where you can still see that humans.
Yeah.
Humans can, you know, get past some of the politics stuff and work together. It's just, humankind, though, on the other hand, we got issues, you know.
Yeah, so. We got to learn to transcend the sovereignty of nations and start working together. So,
but, yeah, there's a lot of issues with that right now.
No doubt. But those Launchpad lectures, I'm glad those things are being well attended and stuff. I still got to try to get out of here on a Friday so I can get up there to one because I really would like to do that.
Yep.
And I promise I won't heckle. So. You don't trust me.
We try to hold questions to the end, but... So, yeah. But, generally, that doesn't happen. Yeah. So, and we the good thing as well with the Launchpad lectures, we have a lot of fun with them.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of joking humor that we're presenting, as well as discussions with the folks who are there for the lectures. You know, we have a lot of fun. You know, and I think that's why people we have a core of folks that just come back month after month.
They just enjoy it.
And there's always good new information.
Yeah.
You know, things that they might not have heard before and really usually haven't heard before.
Yeah.
You know, but because there's a plethora of subjects for us to cover for now until the end of time.
Yeah.
You know, so and space is continuing to go crazy. You know, it's just look at I don't know if you watched it or, you know, if any of your listeners watched it. So, but the testing of the booster for the Starship, you know, just down here in Texas that they did down there at the SpaceX facility. That was incredible. I mean, here you had a rocket with 33 engines on the bottom of it, you know, so putting out more, you know, putting out almost twice as much thrust as what the Apollo rockets did.
And they had four, right? Or three?
They had five.
They had five.
Yep. So five engines.
And
on
this
the bottom.
Has how many?
33.
33.
Now, they're not the same size as the F1 engine. They're much smaller.
Okay.
It's similar to the Soviet Union. Their lunar rocket, and they did build one, was called the N1. It had 30 engines on the bottom of it. And they tried to launch that thing four times, and every single time there were failures in the system, engines fighting each other, you know, destroying it. One of the explosions occurred and blew up the entire launch pad. You know, it was it never quite worked because the controls back then weren't as good. But this time, I mean, it was it had 33 engines on the bottom of it, but not all 33 lit off. And one they shut down before the actual ignition, and another one shut down immediately upon ignition just because there was a fault in that engine. But still, 31 of those things lit off, and it was impressive. And so here in March, they're probably going to launch one of those rockets, those Starships, which are taller than the Saturn V rocket.
Wow.
They're going to launch it up into orbit, you know. So, and then eventually that really becomes the heavy lifter of taking stuff into space.
And that's the one with the 33 engines.
Man. So Starship.
Yeah.
If your folks, just look up SpaceX and Starship, and you'll see the images of this gleaming silver rocket. And there's two stages to it. There's the booster stage, you know, where they're using liquid oxygen and liquid methane.
Wow.
Very, very interesting. You know, and then the upper stages with the actual booster and everything and the return body and the way they bring it back. People should take a look at it. It's fascinating. It's another reusable rocket concept.
Right.
Just like they do with the Falcon 9, and then the Falcon Heavy, where they've got three first stages. That's got 27 engines.
Wow.
You know, when they launch a Falcon Heavy. There's a lot of, you know, heck, once again, let alone what's going on between Blue Origin, between SpaceX's regular launches, between what's coming up with Virgin Galactic, everything, you know. So it's
they're all different.
Yeah.
Different
missions. And then there's a bunch of other companies out there that are either working on suborbital, orbital, deep space boost capabilities, space station, inflatable space station components are being tested up in space right now. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of stuff going on. And once again, here in 10 years, things are going to look very different.
In 10 years, than they do right now. We're actually going to be looking at a space boom going on in about 10 years.
There's already a space boom going on.
Is there really?
Yeah, there's really a space boom. What's going to happen by that point in time? A lot of the space boom right now is in the research and testing.
Right.
10 years from now, it's going to be in the actual operations.
Yeah.
You know, with people seeing
stuff going
on. So
instead of a space boom, that's going to be a space boom.
Yeah. it's going to be an ongoing space operation.
Yeah. Oh, that is fantastic. That is interesting. I tell you what, that is really interesting that's going on. We got a couple of minutes here. What's new at the New Mexico Museum of Space History?
Work. All the work that I was just talking about. Yeah,
talking
so,
about
you know, so,
all,
so, you know, because the exhibit stuff that we're doing right now, we are in that graphic design and write-up phase. we'll probably start putting the, we started putting up some of the changes in the fifth floor. What's going to happen here is the walls and the lighting are going to change over the next 2 to 3 months. Mm-hmm. Then after that finishes, you're going to start seeing, we'll be finishing up write-ups and graphic design for a lot of these exhibits. Then the exhibits will start going up in these areas as well. So, and the first one will be getting the satellite gallery reopened, yeah. And then and that's going to have a new interactive in it, a sensors and satellites interactive on that floor for the first time ever. And then we'll work on the revision of the rockets, missiles, and motors gallery right after that. You know, so yeah, wow.
a lot of things
of work for that. You know, so and one of the things we're keeping our eyes out for is whether or not we get funding to refurbish the XPRIZE trailer,
wow,
and turn that into a mobile exhibit that we're going to take over the state.
Wow.
So yeah, that's we're waiting to see out of the legislative session whether or not we can get a little bit of money for that, you know. So
God, that'd be so great and stuff. Chris, if people want to find out more about the New Mexico Museum of Space History, how do they do it?
They can go to our website at nmspacemuseum.org. They can go to Facebook, Instagram, you know, so all those social media sites and take a look at what we're up to. And if they need to, come up and visit or call at 437-2840. So, and talk to somebody at the front desk.
And if you run into Chris up there, just start talking to him. You'll have a fascinating 30 minutes discussion. So, fantastic. Chris, we look forward to seeing you next time and talking about how the things are going and what we can expect next. And people, get ready. Pay attention. There's a space boom going on right now.
Sounds good. Yep, yeah, a lot of stuff.
Check out the New Mexico Museum of Space History. You can't miss it. It's just that beautiful gold cube up on the hill. Chris, thanks a lot.
Thanks, as always, for having me.
You betcha.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.